How you been?
Life is one crushing defeat after another until you just wish Flanders was dead.
All right, welcome to long delayed WTYKY podcast. It's been a while. Probably because we've all been watching, like, we've been deep in Ottawa Senators playoff hockey, so we haven't really had time to record. But there's a lull now that they've been eliminated from playoff contention, well into the playoffs. So we're going to record. This is Virata. I'm actually phoning in using a telephone, an actual telephone.
You sound like a regular Bob McKenzie calling in to deliver your extremely measured takes on everything.
This is going to turn into political talk radio any minute now. And I got James here with me in Ottawa using voiceover IP of some kind.
I am calling in using my noise-canceling headphones, a.k.a. why you don't see as many tweets about what my coworkers are saying these days. So my quality of life's improved, and hopefully the quality of the audio's improved as well.
So I guess there's two things that have actually happened to the Sens, and we're going to start with the, I guess, good one, which is that Sens end up with fourth overall pick after finishing second last. And here we are, fourth overall. What do you think? How do you feel?
Okay, so here's the thing. Obviously, we all knew that the Sens were going to lose the draft lottery in some respect. So I think we were all kind of prepared for this moment. But I will say this, in the aftermath of this thing, I think this is like a real testament to how beat down fans are at this point, is like people seem like straight up mad that we're picking fourth overall. Like, at the end of the day, it's still like a top five pick. I want the second overall pick too, but it's sort of like, it's almost like picking fourth is like a bad thing.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, the way I was looking at it was, there's one real, the only situation in which I would have been really bummed out was if Ottawa finished last and lost the draft lottery, because there's one clear cut, very, very good player at the top of the draft. And then, as far as I understand it, there's like three or four players who are very good in very different ways after that player, and then anywhere you fall in the top five outside of the first overall pick, you're going to end up with someone who's good. And in a way, the fact that we don't have to like make that choice now, like if we kept our second overall and we're choosing between Russian sniper Svechnikov versus, like, I don't know, power forward farm boy Brady Tkachuk versus like transition game Quinton Hughes or whatever, no matter what we choose, I think fans would immediately go into the like, well, this is a short-sighted choice. Whereas fourth overall, we're going to end up just picking whoever's left over, and they're going to still be a really good player. And I think we'll ultimately be fine with it.
It seems like the most stressful pick is the number two pick, which Montreal got. I had the Zadina kid pegged at number two, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. I guess whoever Ottawa takes, it will depend greatly on who Montreal takes at two. And I guess, we can't dance around this anymore, is that according to the internet, Ottawa has already selected Brazy Tkachuk from, I think, Boston BU, I think he played for. Which I got. Can I deliver a scorcher about this kid real quick?
Please do.
I think you're only allowed to have a scorching hot take about this guy. My hot take is that, like, I bet no one's watched him play a game of hockey. Like, the real book on him is that his numbers were worse than Shane Bowers, right? Who we got some Jim O'Brien like end of round pick, where you're like essentially a second round pick,
right?
But I'll say this, I looked him up a little bit, and Brady Tkachuk started the season in NCAA hockey as a 17-year-old. Like, something tells me he was probably, like, playing in the bottom six. Like, if I'm a U.S. college coach of a college that I've actually heard of, I'm probably going to be, like, slightly cautious with my 17-year-old that I'm, like, not even fully sure is, like, legally allowed to attend the school. And to speak to his numbers a bit, which are, you know, under 10 goals in 40 games, 8 goals, 31 points in 40 games, not jumping off the page. Although I will say this, most U.S. college draft prospects, like, their numbers never jump off the page to me. Like,
right.
even when they're, like, amazing, they're, like, 50 points in 42 games or whatever. And you're like, this, like, third round, like, Francis Perron had 675 points in 60 games in the Quebec League. And, like, he plays on the third line in Belleville. Like, I don't know what to make of either side.
Yeah, I do think college hockey is the exact opposite of QMJHL hockey, where we can draft someone and they can be in, like, the top five in Q scoring and no one really takes it seriously. Well, at the same time, they're like, you know, 14 teams are trying to woo, like, college free agent who like scored at a, like, third of a point per game clip.
Yeah,
to, like, come play as a depth forward for them.
His numbers are pretty, like boring looking, you know, 30 points in 40 games. And I think it's the I word that really gets fans backs up about it. Like, he's full of intangibles, you know, he plays with a mean streak and he's, like, keeps them honest and gets in front of the net and knocks them in or whatever. I think back to the last time that the Sens picked this high in the draft and also lost the draft lottery. Of course, I'm talking about 2011, when I knew everything about the first 100 prospects in the draft because I just needed something. And Mika Zibanejad was definitely a, you know, top 10 player. And he was also very young and playing in the Swedish Elite League, as it was called at the time. And all I knew about him was they showed a clip of him in Djurgården, like, hitting a guy into the bench and, like, maybe scoring one of his 5 goals that he scored that year. And I've always used Zibanejad as a bit of a measuring stick for, like, how little I know about drafting, where they're just sort of like, yeah, this guy in the Swedish league has 9 points in 26 games. Like, he's the guy that we have to take with the highest draft pick we've had since, like, Jason Spezza or whatever.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And Zibanejad is a good NHL player. Like, I was a fan of him for sure. And I remember also, like, Gabriel Landeskog was one, like, and Jonathan Huberdeau were, like, the Jesuses of that draft. And they're, like, kind of Zibanejad-esque, like, maybe, like, slightly better than Zibanejad. They're not franchise players, but they're extremely valuable, like, top six kind of guys.
Well, I mean, I think that Tkachuk is a player that will allow people who are feeling really anxious about the Sens, like, representing an old, like, uninformed, non-evidence-based way of like, organizing a hockey team. If they draft Tkachuk, even if he turns out to be, like, a pretty decent power forward, I can already sort of see the stories being written about how, you know, they're leaving skill on the table in order to, or they're leaving defense on the table in order to, like, go for character and intangibles, which, you know, I don't know if the Sens have really, you know, have really been a team that have put character or intangibles ahead of skill in the draft. Like, I don't know if their draft record really implies that. I mean, this is the team that traded up to draft Erik Karlsson when he was, like, 140 pounds or something like that. So, you know, I don't think it's beyond them to like understand that skill is a desirable thing. in a player. You know, my thing with Tkachuk is that, you know, looking at the draft rankings, like as of a month ago or something like that, some people were saying he's a lock for top five, and some people now have him like top 12 or something. Like his stock seems to have really fallen off. So, you know, say what you will about that stuff. It's all, you know, mercurial or whatever. But, you know, I think it, just from like a fan relations standpoint, you know, like one of the worst things I think they can do is draft a character power forward who other people are starting to sour on. You know, I think, you know, the best thing they can do, given the whole Carlson anxiety right now, is probably draft like a small puck moving defenseman to say, look, you know, we've got that. We didn't get Rasmus Dahlin. We got the next best puck moving defenseman, and we've already got Shabbat on the team. So we're moving in the right direction here. Like it just, you know, obviously it wouldn't, you know, we're not going to know whether any of this works out for like 2 or 3 years, but, I think Brady Tkachuk would just be like another kind of like PR disaster for this team, considering where they are now. Tkachuk would actually work really well for a team like Montreal.
Yeah.
They've actually got a pretty decent lineup and they've got great goaltending, and you could just, they could use a depth power forward.
I think that the worst case scenario would be to like take like Sven Puck Movinson at four and him not work out and Brady Tkachuk to actually be like a good NHL player. Cause you know, like it's pretty at the, given our level of interest or like knowledge about this, is like, we don't really know. Like you said, it takes a few years to work out. And I think that with drafting, every bad sense pick gets like a ton of, you know, mileage out of how stupid it was to take that player at that spot. And, you know, there's not a lot of reflection on, maybe there's a few late round gems that definitely that's remembered, but you know, this is still, you know, like Curtis Lazar, I have argued with people on, I don't know if you heard of this website, twitter.com. Yeah. It's a place where you argue with strangers. And I kind of I hold down that Curtis Lazar was actually not a bad pick. You know, I forget exactly where he was taken in the first round. I think it was like post 15th, like 17 or so. He was like a very good WHL player. Like he's a good league. He was, I think he won the Memorial Cup. Like he had a, he was very good on the World Juniors team, and like he said his prayers before bed and took all his vitamins, and like it's kind of like not, it's not like high risk or anything, but that's sort of the player that you take when you have 17th overall. Like what, you know, it's sort of weird that he hasn't worked out at the NHL level given his like game. You'd think he'd be like a Jean-Gabriel Pageau, like a good two-way forward that's like not gonna like challenge for the top five in scoring on the team, but certainly like can play at the NHL level. And you know, for Lazar, this is the same team that took Shabbat at 18 and Colin White at 21, and no one's like pissed about those like arguably really smart picks. In fact, Shabbat was, you know, he's kind of like touted as a steal of that draft. Logan Brown, he was taken outside the top 10. He's looking like promising. So it's one of the hardest things to know. It's kind of like coaching, like what's going on behind the scenes. But I don't think that Ottawa, you could say Ottawa's a terrible drafting team. You know, like I'm pretty excited to take in the top five.
I also kind of hope they don't slot the player in like right away next year, because again, people sort of like fire up their rush development templates. Right. But you know, anyone they end up with, I am kind of interested in sort of the Quinton Hughes type players. Bockvist is an interesting player as well. I don't know if he'll go top five. I would even be interested in seeing, like, from what I understand, you have like Dahlin, who's right at the top, clear cut number one. maybe a couple of guys underneath there, Zadina and Svechnikov. And then you have this whole group of players that are pretty comparable that are in the top 10. I'd be sort of interested to even see what Ottawa, if it makes sense for Ottawa to trade down a couple of spots, what they could get by moving down. I mean, I know people would lose their minds. They would hate that. But if Ottawa moved down to like sixth or seventh and were able to add a late round first, for that, you know, I think that would be pretty interesting.
Well, they have 22 as well.
Yeah, I heard that also Edmonton is picking 10th, and they're looking to move it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's super interesting to think of, like, could Ottawa package, like, 22nd overall and, like, Cody Ceci or something to Edmonton for 10th overall. And then, I mean, I think that would get people excited to pick
that'd
the top 10.
That'd be great!
I mean, even though, like, as much as we all know that Cody Ceci is terrible, heading into, like, next season with, you know, the defense that we have, possibly minus Carlson, and also, like, at some point you actually need, like, a physical human being to be, like, in skates on your defense. So if they traded CC, I don't even, at some point you're just, I don't know, is it England or something like that? Or
Can you confirm that Cody Ceci is a human being on skates at this point? I am willing to roll the fucking dice on someone else at this point. Like that, I think I saw that Willinen guy play two times, and I was like, "Yeah, let's do it. It's fine. Like, I don't give a shit." If you want to get nihilistic about this, what do you think about this strategy to like give the number four pick to Colorado this year? Because if you thought this year was bad, next year is going to be even worse. And, you know, the smart moves to give the pick up now. Before you deliver your scorching hot opinion on this, I'll just say that to have endured what feels like maybe the worst Sens year ever, you know, like I won't even get into some of the depressing reasons why, because this is supposed to be fun. To not even get the high pick is just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I don't think they can do it. I don't think there's any way they can give up the pick this year. Even if you think they're going to be worse next year, they've already dropped down two spots this year. The most likely thing in any given year is that you'll drop down. That's the bigger probability than you actually winning. So even if they finish bottom five again next year, they could drop down. Even if they finish last overall or second last overall, they could drop down again. So I really don't think you can go into a season telling your players that you expect to be worse. Like, I don't think that's anything you can do in competitive sports. You know, the worst case scenario is you end up with like a Toronto-like situation where they end up losing out on Tyler Seguin or something like that. And, you know, they ended up with Matt Duchene. That's all I can say. Like it's maybe it's not comparable. Maybe you want those cheap guys on entry level contracts. You don't want your Matt Duchene that you're gonna have to pay $9 million for or whatever. But they didn't end up with nothing. They did end up with Matt Duchene out of it. So, you know, there are worse things. You know, just like Toronto had Phil Kessel and they lost out on Tyler Seguin, but you know they had Phil Kessel. Like they had a good player. If they had built around him properly, maybe they would have been better. It's not the end of the world. I think you gotta take the fourth overall now. And next year, I wouldn't be surprised if Ottawa misses the playoffs next year, but I could see them finishing, you know, 10th or, you know, 8th or something like that. And I don't mind losing that pick in exchange for Matt Duchene.
Yeah.
I think they have to pick. They have to take the fourth overall. You know, the thing that I don't think we really want to talk about, but I think this is going to be the big the game changer here. You know, for the next month or so, we're going to be debating whether they should take player X or player Y. But if Carlson's traded, then everything changes, right? Like like they're going to end up with a lot of picks and potentially prospects.
Yeah.
If they trade Carlson, and if that's the case, they can package some of those picks and move up or move down or whatever. Even if they have to, if they're just trying to shed Bobby Ryan's salary and they combine them and it lessens the return, they're still going to get something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's going to really change the dynamic. You know, maybe they end up with a top 10 pick, you know, if they were going to trade him, which obviously I don't think they should, but they're going to trade him, I think they should talk to like Carolina. Carolina is a team that's I make fun of them a lot. I make fun of people a lot for saying that they're always going to be scary good, but they've got like, you know, good bones. That house has good bones. They've got a lot of good young players. Everyone thinks they're built right. They've got a new owner who wants to like spend money smart. Could you go to Carolina and say, is Carolina picking second or third? I think they're picking
third, I believe. I think Montreal
is picking third. Could you say, okay, Carolina, you can you take Bobby Ryan off our hands and Erik Karlsson, and we want a very good prospect on this and the third overall pick. And then you're going into next year with third and fourth overall players in your pool, a pretty good goaltending prospect, which, you know, we should probably talk about for a while. Like Brassard looked like hot garbage in the playoffs for Pittsburgh, and we ended up with a pretty decent goaltending prospect in return, plus a first round pick. Weirder things have happened. I mean, Las Vegas is in the conference finals, for Christ's sake. Ottawa, even without Carlson, could end up finishing better than second last overall.
I honestly don't believe that this, what we saw this year is the Ottawa Senators. Do I think they're the conference final team we saw? Probably not, although they still did it. You can't take that away from them. And, you know, Las Vegas is doing that right now and there's no God. But, you know, like, I think they're definitely somewhere in the middle. And I also think that Boston's not that good. I don't think Toronto's that good. And I don't think Montreal is that good. And I know Buffalo's fucking terrible. Like, I don't think they're going to come in second last again next year. Carlson being what everything hinges on, but, you know.
Their goaltending doesn't need to be that much better than it was last year for them to rebound a little bit. Like, yeah. Anderson had basically the worst season in his career after having the best season in his career. Yeah. So if he's somewhere in between there, that adds 3 or 4 wins to your season total. And that's not enough for you to be good, but it's enough for you to be 2 or 3 picks lower in the draft. So, yeah. I really don't see it, even if they lose Carlson into next year. You know, there have been weirder things, you know, like, then, I mean, even like, think about how bad Phoenix was to start the year.
Yeah.
You know, like just terrible. And then for the second half of the season, with nothing to play for, they're already out of the playoffs. They played really well. They had a winning record for the second half of the season. No one really paid attention to it because they were already out of the playoffs. But like, you know, there are definitely weirder things that can happen than a team that gets obviously worse playing above their heads in a second season. And you can't go into the season thinking, well, we're obviously terrible. You know, I just don't think you can do that because, you know, you're throwing your season tickets holders under the bus. Like, no one's going to, why would you ever go to a game in a season that, I mean, can you picture anyone in Ottawa going to a tanking season game on a Wednesday night?
You know, to Dorian's credit, he did eventually kind of like drain the swamp of Boucher's like good, hardworking men that aren't very good. So, you know, I could, yeah, like not the worst season of his career from Anderson. Boucher maybe like swallowing his pride and cleaning things up a bit. I don't know if it's another tank year next year. The not knowing about what's going to happen with Carlson sucks the air out of everything as soon as you start to consider anything positive. But
yeah, Well, so that feels like a good place to transition to talking about the coaching staff. You know, you said that, Dorian had drained the swamp of Boucher's hardworking men, and I think you're right. But then, obviously, as we all know, announced that Boucher would be back next year, along with all of the coaching staff, including the, I know they shuffled around responsibilities. So, like, whoever was responsible for the power play and the penalty kill, they switched that around without much of an effect. But so what are your thoughts on this? I mean, obviously, people online sort of lost their minds. It would have, like, made people feel a little better just to even see an assistant coach go. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit hesitant to – I don't really ever, like, talk of – like destroying a person's livelihood because you need to, for the optics, you know what yeah. I mean? Like, I don't really, it's like people saying like, okay, you know, after a big loss, you know, the GM's got to go, and you're just throwing out like all of the relationships, all of the contacts, everything that's been built for like a week of good press or something like that. Like it seems like it does get you that, but that doesn't seem worth it to me. I don't really ever like, we should fire this guy from the NHL because, a bunch of people who can't really articulate what exactly he does feel better that someone got punished for a bad season. Like, that doesn't feel, it kind of like hurts my tummy to think like that way. You know what I mean? But I would totally understand though if they did fire somebody. So, I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think this is definitely in keeping with, like, I'm having a hard time forming a strong opinion about this because on top of it only being his second year, this is the biggest drop-off since 2007 went into 2008, right? Like, they make the Stanley Cup final, lose, and then, like, just – like barely fucking make it into the playoffs the next year and get their asses handed to them by the Pittsburgh Penguins, which is a hockey tradition at this point. But like that was almost jaw dropping, you know, like the team was more or less the same where you had like Alfredson, Fisher, Heatley, Emery. And like, you're just kind of like shell shocked that like it was the same team. Mm-hmm. But the Boucher thing complicates it even more because the guy comes in and let's none of us pretend that we weren't excited about Boucher. Like, the system was a real thing. He comes in, we love the system. We kind of hate our way to the Eastern Conference Final, Game 7. It was the most fun the team's been since 2007. And, you know, everything was looking great until this year. And then they're the second worst team in the league. How do you just say, like, you're fired? You know, like, it's one amazing season and one brutally bad season. Yeah. And that takes me to my next point is, like, what, are we going to fucking fire the coach every second year? Like, you know, we talk about money all the time and being smart. It's like, I don't know if, like, that's firing him is the answer either. Like, we're just going to pay, like, what are we up to? Like, five coaches now. like, I don't know if that's a good use of resources. I will say the one thing that is most surprising is that no one truly fell on the sword about the power play. And apparently Boucher is going to be in charge of the power play this year. And I'm like, I don't know how coaching works. Like, what, he wasn't supposed to see, he didn't like kick down like Mark Crawford or whoever the hell was in charge of the power play's door and like just take over halfway through the season? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the two places where Ottawa's game really failed them this year were special teams and goaltending. So I don't know if it makes any sense to like, you don't see goaltending coaches being let go by any teams like really regularly. You know, every once in a while, a team with like a very, very clear-cut starting goaltender that they've invested a lot of money in will change their goaltending coach if after two or three seasons their franchise goaltender hasn't turned it around. Like, it's not weird to see like Cam Ward's goaltending coach get replaced or something like that, because they're a team that believes that the goalie is capable of better. But generally speaking, it's almost like the goaltender is more likely to be replaced than your goaltending coach. So, and especially a guy like Anderson, who's like in the sort of twilight of his career, firing the goaltending coach, what, like Anderson's going to like play differently? He's going to become a different goaltender? Like, I think a lot of it was just, that's sort of the way it worked this year. The goaltending was pretty bad. Next year, it'll probably rebound at least a little bit, enough to win a few extra games. And, you know, maybe the power play, I could understand bringing in somebody different, but again, you know, they're not going to hire more people. If all of these guys are on contract right now, I think they end up keeping them.
Yeah. And I think you've had tremendous success and you've had brutal failure. It's kind of 50-50. I think you have to give it a third year. I don't know. Maybe I'm more forgiving than other people are. Like, maybe people are more fed up with this sort of like nickel and dime coaching, but I'm not ready to pull the plug on Guy Boucher. I think he seems like a very intelligent guy, and I'm at least willing to like hear him out for what, like, I could see him. I mean, that's how he got back into the NHL, is it not? Like, he sort of was like, I know what went wrong in Tampa, and I've learned from my mistakes. It's like, have to change a few things and, you know, give younger players more of a shot. And he's straight up gotten rid of most of the like experienced bottom six players that he asked Dorion for. And also, you know, towards the end of the year, you see things like Thomas Chabot playing 20 minutes a night, you know, like, I'm okay with it, giving him another crack at it.
I mean, I think that there is one fundamental thing hasn't changed here, which is, so if you're Ottawa and you're a team on a budget and you're not able to just pick up high-priced, ultra-skilled players and put them all on a team together, you know, what Guy Boucher promised was an ability to give you a chance to win every game with a less skilled lineup, with his whole like own the middle of the ice system. And it worked in his first season. In his first season, Ottawa was pretty consistently outshot. They didn't possess the puck very much, but with good goaltending, which anybody can get, and a couple of scoring threats, you can win enough games if you match up against the right opponents to have some success. So the team hasn't changed. Like, they haven't gotten more skilled, really. They've stayed about the same. Like, Duchesne is better than Turris. That's fair. They lost Brassard, so maybe you call it a wash. Who else could you possibly bring in who's going to give you a better chance to win with that lineup? Like, Boucher's whole brand is like, I'm going to give you a chance to win with a bargain basement lineup. So I don't know. Maybe they bring in Tippett or something like that. You know, like, Tippett was the coach in Arizona for years, and he always had them playing better than they were. Maybe you bring in another guy who specializes in bargain basement lineups or something like that. But you've already got one under contract. So I'm kind of with you on this. Like, I'm fine with another year of, you know, Boucher being like, yeah, you know, my special sauce either works or it doesn't. But you're not going to, like, what are they going to go out and get a coach who specializes in, like, get it to Ovechkin, like, on the left dot, you know? Oh, by the way, we don't have an Ovechkin in the lineup. So, like, I'm not really sure what the point is. Unless they want to go, like, full apologist to the fan base and be like, bring in like a former player or something like that. Bring in,
oh,
like,
Jesus.
You know, just pure, like, bring in Alfredson to be like an assistant GM, and then bring in like somebody who's working their way up through the minor league ranks. Bring back Luke Richardson or something like that.
Yeah. It's the goaltending where I wish Hogberg and Gustafsson were a little bit older, because Gustafsson sounds really promising, but he's like 18 or something, which is an age you never hear a goaltender coming up into the NHL at. So he's a ways off. And, like, you know, I love Anderson, and, you know, he would – 2 seasons ago, he was absolutely, like, above and beyond considering what he was going through and delivered an amazing performance. You know, this year, you got to give him a mulligan. I think he's the best goaltender we've ever had. But he's 36. He'll be 37 this year. It's like, you got to, like – you're basically just praying he's like a Dwayne Rollison at this point, where he'll be good till he's 40. Because I tell you what, like, Mike Condon, I am worried about that too. <It's> like, like, he had 5 wins this year. Like, you know, Craig Anderson's, like, putting up a losing season is, like, kind of not a regular occurrence for him. And, like, Condon's job's, like, to go in there and, like, lose half of his games, and, like, 5-17-5, like, that is, like, if something happens to Anderson, you're like, holy shit, like, that's a buyout season, in my opinion. Like,
yeah,
like, even for a backup goalie, that is, like, pathetic. It's really bad. So the goal, like, hopefully Anderson, you know, gives us, like, another good year. But that Condon deal still has years on it. Like, it's brutal.
Yeah, the other thing I wonder about is second-line center. You know, I do think you could have White in there. But as of now, they're kind of going with, like, Pageot at second-line center, which, you know, might work out fine. He's a... other teams are running, like, Paul Stastny or whoever as, like, their second line centers, you know, like, their second line centers making $6 million a year. Kyle Turris, for example. Ottawa's going to head into next season with Pageau as their, like, only experienced second line center. That's, or I guess, you know, I remember them playing Zach Smith in that position. That's going to be scary, I think. I'm not sure what Guy Boucher does with any of that. Basically, we need Anderson to return to form.
Yeah.
Or at least be league average in order to keep them out of, like, the lottery pick position.
Anderson back, and also maybe, like, White and or Brown to show some promise pretty quickly.
Yeah.
To at least insulate things. I mean, like, you know, some of these – Brown is a little early – in the goings. He was still in junior, but he got some looks in the NHL. But, like, I think the pressure is really on White to sort of become a full-time NHLer and be, like, decent at it. And, you know, he was on a line with piece of shit Patrick Kane at the Loser Olympics that are going on right now. So it's kind of cool.
So, I mean, what are your, what else have we got on the, what else have we got to look forward to here as we go through all the sort of, like, major things? It's sort of like, okay, Carlson possibly still on the block, fourth overall pick, you know, instead of second overall pick. Last I checked, you know, the city of Ottawa is, like, begging for some kind of clarity that LeBreton is even going to happen. So I don't know how to feel about any of that. I mean, what are you going into this, next season? I mean, what are you excited for? What's something you're like, okay, this is going to be something that's going to get me to turn into the games?
I didn't go to any of those town hall meetings, but, like, one thing I really liked about Melnick out was, like, it's sort of really solidified, like, no, seriously, like, we're really fucking mad. And, like, we're aware that you are, like, even floating the idea of trading Carlson for, like, financial relief. And, you know, this is the star player that you're moving for that reason of a few now that, like, will not stand. So I'm hoping it's at least 50-50 that they might keep him. If they keep him, I think there is actually promise. I think that Dorian explicitly saying, like, give more of a chance to some of the young players, which I think is a good strategy in the league this year unless you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you don't have a defensive core. But you can see they've like floated. There's like they can certainly score with like inexperienced players that are good, you know. So I think that, you know, there could be some exciting young kids in the lineup. But also, you know, there might be a war with Iran at that point. So,
yeah, I think, you know, as perverse as this sounds, you know, obviously I don't want Ottawa to trade Carlson at all. But from like a purely bloodless, try to be objective perspective on like interesting things that happen sometimes, it's really, really rare that like one of the best players in the entire league changes teams.
Yeah.
It's super fascinating to see, to think about what Ottawa could get if there was an honest to God bidding war for Carlson. Let's say that, you know, it's not just about clearing Bobby Ryan's contract as well. Let's say that they actually put him on the market, but they want the best hockey deal possible. You know, I've listened to a lot of podcasts and read a lot of articles about it where people have been like, oh, you know, people don't give up that much anymore for rentals. And, you know, what are they going to get? Like a pick, a prospect, and like a roster player? And I really don't think that's going to happen with a player like Carlson. Like everyone's seen what he can do. You know, they could end up with a pretty amazing haul for him. And I mean, everything they get will be lottery tickets. Like, I totally get it. You know, none of the things they get for Carlson might work out. And that's why I still think they should re-sign him.
Yeah.
But it is kind of exciting to think about Ottawa going from like having this perpetually kind of like meh farm team and like a terrible AHL team to like suddenly being loaded with good young talent. Like that's something we haven't had in a while. Like we always have good prospects, but I mean, like not best of the best blue chippers, you know, like it'll be pretty exciting to see Ottawa potentially having like five or six like guys who could turn into like real game breakers.
I've definitely had like middle of the night thoughts before any of this ever happened is like, what if Carlson demanded a trade out of town or something? And the only thing I could do to like ease my crushing anxiety was that like, well, if you're ever going to trade Erik Karlsson, you're going to get a fucking good return for him. Like I agree. It's not like pick a prospect and a roster player. That's like a Matt Duchene trade, you know, like, mm-hmm. Erik Karlsson's more of a like, I don't know why I keep thinking of it like that Phil Kessel trade where it was like two first round picks and a second round pick where it's sort of like, and like probably some magic beans like on top of that where it's like, I think whoever wants to pry him out of Dorian's grip would have to do so in pretty tantalizing fashion. So
yeah,
I'm just going to pretend that's not happening. Do you want to plug your new project?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So let me talk a little bit about Hockey Brunch. Hockeybrunch.com is, you know, this is something that, I've been talking about with you guys for a while. I've been talking about it with other hockey fans and friends, for a bit. You know, it feels to me like, hockey writing, only really has two or three different kinds of stories, like templates that it goes back to. You know, you've got your sort of game recap, you've got your, like who's got to step up and who's really like, you know, being a game day player and that's sort of it. But I don't really ever learn anything about the people who really love the game. I don't really ever learn anything about the fans except in my hometown. And I know that like, for me, the whole point of being into hockey is my friends and the community that I'm a part of. You know, I moved to another city and I'm not suddenly a gigantic San Jose Sharks fan because I don't have the same connection to the community here as I do in Ottawa. So, you know, I've long sort of thought about what would it be like if we had like a publication that was dedicated entirely to hockey culture. or I should say, not just hockey culture, not like the guys in the dressing room, but the cultures that form around hockey. And I know, James, you and I talked a while ago about like seeing this like amazing Ottawa band Genevois like cluster around a television and like watch an Ottawa Senators game and being like, oh wow, this kind of like arty like jazzy punk band is into Ottawa Senators hockey. I never really thought about that, and I want to know more about these like people who are interested in hockey and how they got into it. Cool. So I don't think that I think the last thing we need is another website, to be honest with you, writing about Ottawa Senators hockey. I think there's a lot out there, but what I'd really love is for people to like have something they can hold in their hands. You know, like you and I have played in bands, you know, we record things and we share them with friends, and yeah, it's a thing to like share with your community, and they're like amazing and supportive, and they buy it and they listen to it, and it's a little bit different than just sort of putting it on the internet and watching it like sort of disappear immediately. So Hockey Brunch is going to be a paper zine, and I'm looking for submissions for the inaugural issue. I've already got 3 or 4. They're really awesome so far.
And anyone out there listening right now, where do they find your sorry ass?
Well, you should just go to hockeybrunch.com. And the site right now describes, you know, what the zine is there for, why it exists, and how to submit if you're interested in submitting. My email is on there as well. If you're like not sure if you want to submit, if you want to know more, you can find my email address on there. I'm on Twitter at this 3 time, which is impossible to remember. And it's gonna be fun. People get it in the mail, get a nice printed zine that is kind of collectible. And if it takes off and we, go through the initial run, then maybe we'll crowdsource some money and make it a regular thing.
And most of all, Ian, you have a little bit of fun with it.
That's the ultimate hope, is that it's the thing that people come to live for in
maybe,
the darkness.
Maybe Sean Simpson will unblock me if he sees one of my submissions in this thing.
And Bruce Garriock me.
I guess just before we wrap up, Russia, if you're listening, I hope you can find the 100 favors that the real Noriega owes Rick Ross. I think you'll receive a copy of Hockey Brunch when it drops.